Good morning. This is Studio 395, a production of the Department of History at James Madison University, and its Historical Research Methods course, History 395. I'm Gretchen Shahiri, a senior here at James Madison University, who is majoring in IDLS with a minor in history. I'm here today with Blake Pearsall, a junior who is majoring in history. Do you have a minor yet?
Not currently, but I'm trying to go into the education program.
That's a great program. I'm here today to talk with Blake about his paper, Life and the Involvement in the Civilian Conservation Corps. The Civilian Conservation Corps was a highly experimental environmental conservation program which took place during the depth of the Great Depression. Millions of impoverished young men and boys flocked to conservation corps around the country seeking stable work and a place where they could gain self-respect and discipline. So we're here today to ask Blake some questions about his paper. The first one I'd wish to ask is, why was the implementation of the CCC during the Great Depression so necessary, Blake?
All right, cool. So I'd say that the CCC was very important to the betterment of the nation during the Great Depression, simply because about a quarter of the American youth was not enrolled in work or school. So you had a quarter of the American youth essentially just riding the rails. They call them the teenage tramps of America because they'd go from state to state, city to city to try to figure out, you know, just where they could find work and just where they could find their next meal. So the Civilian Conservation Corps was a fantastic place where they're able to go and actually learn, you know, life skills and gain a little bit of self-respect and self-discipline.
Awesome. What kind of conservation works did the camps perform?
Each camp performed various conservation works. Usually it had to do with their geographical location or region. So there are camps that were specified for forestry, where they would clear like underbrush. They would do hiking trails in the mountains. There were ones that were specified for soil conservation, which were more around farmers. So they could build irrigation systems and make sure that the farmers actually had correct farming methods. So they performed various conservation efforts throughout the country, and it just depended on pretty much which camp and where it was.
So what do you say what was the basic age group for this group of boys?
So when the Civilian Conservation Corps first started out, it was 18 to 25.
Okay.
That was to try to target the most impoverished youth. And when the program eventually expanded a few years later, they put it from, I believe it was 18 to 25 to 17 to 28. And through that time, they also allowed World War I veterans in, Native Americans, and they had African Americans in certain parts of the Civilian Conservation Corps.
Okay. Do you feel like it was a place for troubled youth?
Certainly, yeah. There's a lot of stories about men and young boys going to the Civilian Conservation Corps and actually initially getting into just minor like altercations or fights with the camp commanders just because they hadn't really been in an area of authority before. And certainly some would have deserted during that time because they wouldn't have been prepared for that kind of a life. But definitely, I think that it was for a place for the impoverished youth to go to actually
kind of mold them.
Yeah, like mold their kind of person and their personality and make them just
More responsible
and allow them to go back into society and actually improve the society they came from.
Okay. Where you talked about the previous task, were there any other tasks the CC boys were assigned to other than just conservation?
Right. So about like a year into the Civilian Conservation Corps' life, they were actually interestingly given the authority to deal with ecological crises. So like say like a flood were to happen or a fire were to happen, like the CCC camps could be mobilized to actually go and combat them, and they'd like work with the National Guard or any kind of local agencies to in order to just retain the society. So there was a great flood that happened where they had mobilized an entire corps, like an entire like command and an entire division. So they had somewhere near like 10 or 15 like companies of men just showing up and having to do just various conservation and like damage control works. So that would be the majority of their work outside of natural conservation.
Yeah, my grandfather was in one of the Front Royal, actually, the CCC camp, and he was sent to San Francisco just to paint the Golden Gate Bridge as part of a task to do.
Yeah.
So, yes, they did a lot of different things. Aside from the stable jobs, what else did the boys receive from the CCC, do you feel?
So I've talked a bit about like the discipline and self-respect and whatnot, and that was pretty much what they received. So in addition to a stable job, they also were allowed to choose to pursue an education. As I said before in the beginning, a fair amount of the youths going into this camps didn't have up-to-par education with how old they were. And the CCC was able to devise a education program that would actually bring all these people up to basic literacy, eighth grade education, just basic know-how, and then give them vocational skills in order to actually go back out into the working world and have a desirable job application where people would actually want to hire them.
Awesome. And they made, I believe you said in your paper, $1 a day?
Right. So the idea for $1 a day was the fact that Roosevelt didn't want to build a welfare state. And that had a little bit of drawback between national labor unions and the American Federation of Labor. And the major reason why it was only $1 a day was because that they were actually given essentially room and board.
Yeah.
And then in addition to that, they got $1 a day. And then another interesting part about that is that, you know, you may think like, oh, they get like $30 a month, but actually $25 every single month had to go back to their dependent.
How did the education program come to fruition during the CCC?
So it was talked about very, very early on the CCC, trying to figure out ways that it could expand its purpose. Went through a couple of interesting setbacks, but it came to fruition around 1935 when random like camps without really authorization or any sort of instruction would just have meetings with various men who wanted to actually learn more about what had caused the changes in the society, like why were they like stuck in these CCC camps, like why was the Great Depression happening, like they wanted to know like the know-how and like what was actually going on, like what was the government doing and all that stuff. And then that quickly gained popularity throughout the camps, and various camps adopted it until it became a pretty integral part towards the Civilian Conservation Corps.
Okay. So my final question for you today is, how did the CCC ultimately end?
So it ended kind of with World War II, actually. At that time, the Great Depression was less rampant. America was starting to rebound. And, of course, when World War II was starting to escalate and we were starting to fear our involvement in it, money going towards the Civilian Conservation Corps, as far as federally like was concerned, like wasn't as important. You know, we needed to work on like a defensive budget. We needed to start building a standing army. And sure, like the CCC did a decent job at building like an interesting kind of peacetime army, since it was headed by the army and it was headed by like the War Department, but they weren't allowed to do any kind of military trainings in order to keep the appearance of it being a purely conservation effort. So towards World War II, the CCC slowly got defunded, and the camps were being scrapped for spare parts or whatever kind of uses, any kind of equipment they had, anything that they could use for the war effort. And interestingly enough, actually, the CCC was never decommissioned. So technically, really? It's still legal. It's still a part of our law. It just...
Well, I think that's all I have for today. Thank you so much for coming in and speaking with me about your paper. I want to thank you all for listening to Studio 395. If you care to hear more interviews on a wide range of historical topics, as well as a subscription to our podcast, all of this is available on our show page at www.sites.jmu.edu/studio395. Please go and check it out. To learn more about the history major here at James Madison University and their amazing faculty in the history department, especially Dr. Heiser, our professor for this course, please visit www.jmu.edu/history. This is Gretchen Shahiri signing off. Thank you all once again for listening. Have a great day.